This is your Wrestle Kingdom 17 review for January 4th, 2023 from the Tokyo Dome. I am the Solemn Monster here on a Wednesday evening. A little before I usually go live, we're going to be doing two streams tonight. This is number one of two. Tonight is a big episode of AEW Dynamite with a loaded card, a brand new set, all new graphics, all new look. And we'll be talking about Dynamite a little bit later on. But right now, I wanted to get in a quick review, since I didn't finish the pay-per-view until just a couple of hours ago. What I thought was a very, very long, but very enjoyable show, with a crowd of 26,085 fans. That was New Japan's biggest crowd at the Tokyo Dome here since the pandemic started. And they mentioned this on commentary, that if you combine the crowds for the last two Wrestle Kingdoms, the attendance here on this show beat that out when you combine the two numbers. So it was nice to not only have that many people in the building, but for the first time in a very long time, fans were allowed to cheer and do more than just clap. They were allowed to actually make noise, which was nice. It sounded like they were still leery of doing so. And I know that New Japan, there were some new rules that are in place. There's still guidelines where you can't do certain things. I don't know if that maybe had something to do with it, but at least they were able to make some actual noise, because that does make a difference on shows like this, especially when you're in a big building. You know, the Tokyo Dome can fit about 60,000 people. So, yeah, when you talk about it, relatively speaking, 25,000, 26,000 in a building that big, you want them to be able to make noise. So, again, thankfully, we are heading in the right direction as far as that is concerned. But it was a night of new champions, including a new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, and thy name is Okada. Stop me if you've heard that one before. Big match Okada. This is the stage that he shines on here in the main event of the Tokyo Dome, beating Jay White to become a two-time IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. We also have a new IWGP United States Champion. His name is Kenny Omega, who went out there tonight. I say tonight, it was actually this morning. Who went out there this morning and put in a performance that we have not seen out of him, maybe since the last time we saw him in Japan, to be perfectly honest. And that's not to say that he hasn't had great matches in AEW, because he has. I can rattle off a whole list of them. Kenny Omega and Hangman Page against the Young Bucks. Kenny Omega against Bryan Danielson. Kenny Omega against Hangman Page, right? There have been plenty of great AEW matches that he has been in, but this is a different Kenny Omega. And the Kenny Omega we got on this show was a vicious heel. This was the Kenny Omega of old and New Japan. This was the cleaner. And it's been years since we've seen this version of him. And so it was very cool to be able to see that. But he and Will Ospreay put in what will end up being a match of the year contender when this year is over. If the balloting were to end right now, just counting the matches on this show and that we have seen on TV so far this week, Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay would be your match of the year. I know that's not a huge body of matches to choose from, but this match will definitely be in the conversation. They had an outstanding battle, where again, Omega played this vicious heel who was just doing everything he possibly could to tear down Will Ospreay. And they were really putting a lot of sympathy on Ospreay, building him back up. He was trying to make a comeback, but in the end, it was too much. And Omega wins the United States Championship. That starts his second run. He was the very first U.S. champion when they introduced that title. And that means that we're going to get more Kenny Omega in New Japan. Although I would guess a lot of those appearances are going to be right here in the U.S. Hence why he's the U.S. champion. I don't think Tony Khan is going to want Kenny Omega flying back and forth to Japan too many times. But the fact that he won the title, clearly he's going to be doing more. Clearly there, I would think, is going to be a rematch with him and Will Ospreay. If it's anything like the match they had on this show, sign me the fuck up. This blew away everything else on the show. This was an outstanding match. But we also had new IWGP Tag Team Champions crowned. FTR, boy, you know, FTR used to come out. Wasn't that long ago. FTR would come out only a few months ago. They were draped in gold. They had the Ring of Honor Tag Team titles. So those are gone. They had the AAA Tag Team titles. Those are gone. Now the IWGP Tag Team titles. Those are gone. They feel very naked. They have no gold. They dropped the titles here on this show. We also have a new never open weight champion, probably the least surprising outcome of all the matches on this show. Tama Tonga taking the title from Carl Anderson. That's the closest we're going to get to WWE against New Japan, was that match on this show. And we have a new junior heavyweight champion as well. But the other big story, really, I think people are going to be talking about two things when it comes to Wrestle Kingdom 17. And when I think back to Wrestle Kingdom 17, I'm going to think of two things. Number one, I'm going to think of that Will Ospreay-Kenny Omega match, because that stole the show. But the other thing people are going to be talking about was the arrival of Mercedes Moné, the former Sasha Banks from WWE, who is now officially a free agent. She was free as of January 1st. And yes, I believe she is still listed on the WWE.com roster page. Doesn't mean anything. She is free to fly and land wherever she wants to, and her first landing spot was at the Tokyo Dome here at Wrestle Kingdom. Kairi retains her IWGP Women's Championship to the surprise of no one. That was the second easily the second most predictable outcome of the entire show. The first one was Carl Anderson losing his title, but the second one was Kairi retaining hers. When the match was over, we heard music. We could see a Titantron, for lack of a better word, up on the big screens, and out she came. This is something that she has wanted her entire life. Sasha has spoken in multiple interviews over the years about wanting to work in Japan. In fact, when she took a little sabbatical a couple of years back, and she disappeared for a few months, one of the places that she went to visit was Japan. She reached out to Meiko Satomura and said, "I want to come train with you." Meiko said, "Come on over." Sasha went over there and she trained with her. Sasha has been all over the place. She's been to Japan. She's been to Mexico. She has trained all over the world, but she has always wanted to work in Japan. So for her, this was a very big moment. I do wish it was one of those things when it was over where I really wish it was a surprise and none of us knew anything about her appearing on this show, because then it would have had more impact, I think, for us watching. So it was very cool to see her. As far as my thoughts on the actual debut and how all of that went, we'll get into it here in the review. I want to throw up a photo, though, real quick, which I thought was pretty cool. This was backstage of the Tokyo Dome earlier this morning. There they are. We got Sasha. We got Naomi. We got Bayley. And we got FT. And I like that shirt. I like the, that's Zeus, right? Is that Zeus? That should be Zeus. Like that shirt that Cash is wearing. So this was a cool photo. Little reunion here. Little WWE reunion backstage at the Tokyo Dome. But you see it right there on her face. You know, for all the people who are going to be tweeting and posting messages and in the live chat saying, you know, talking about the reaction of the crowd or lack thereof, or talking about how, you know, botched the move was that she hit on Kairi, and oh, this, you know, should have been better and this and that. That right there. This is what she wanted. She is getting exactly what she wanted. She's living her dream. And it's going to be fun to see where she lands. Because there was something that she said at the post-show press conference that was very interesting. She made a very interesting comment in the press conference, which I will cover as well. So let's get into this here, because, again, I don't want to spend too much time on this. I still have to get ready and put the page up for Dynamite. So when we're done here, don't go anywhere, because I'm going to put the Dynamite page up and I'll need you to hit the like button on that. But hit the like button on this video, subscribe, super chat. Those are all ways that you can support not only this video, but this channel. And if you do, I appreciate it very much. Because again, there is a lot going on and it's very time consuming, but it's fun, right? Great wrestling. Can't complain about great. We got great wrestling on this show. And we're going to get some more tonight on Dynamite. So things kicked off on the pre-show with the annual Rambo Battle Royal. This was your standard Rambo, people making entries every few minutes. Last year's King of Pro Wrestling, Shingo Takagi. And I'm very disappointed he did not have a bigger match or a bigger presence on this show. But Shingo Takagi, he was the final entrant into the Rambo. And the final four men left standing at the end were Shingo, Great Okan, Sho, and Toriano. So they were the final four. As a result, the four of them will meet tomorrow at New Year New Year Dash. Almost choked on myself there. That's what happens when you eat before you stream. I had to wolf down my dinner just to get this done. So it's still making its way down the digestive tract here. But they're going to have a match at New Year Dash in the morning to crown the first 2023 King of Pro Wrestling Provisional Champion. We had an Antonio Inoki Memorial six-man tag team match. This closed out the pre-show. We had Togi Makabe, Satoshi Kojima, and Yuji Nagata taking on Tatsumi Fujinami, Tiger Mask, and Minoru Suzuki. I wanted to look, I was curious, how old is Tatsumi Fujinami? Because Fujinami has been around for just ages. And Fujinami is 69 years old, inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, for those who don't know, in 2015. And if you ever wanted to know where the Dragon Sleeper or the Dragon Suplex come from, he's your guy. This was the nostalgia match. Honestly, Fujinami being in the ring and he kicked things off, 69 years old, he looked pretty good for 69, for what he did in this match. But it sort of fell apart a little bit, the match did at the end. Makabe sat down on a roll-up attempt by Tiger Mask and pinned him to win the match. Again, very basic stuff here. And that then fed into the main card, which opened with the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles on the line, with Francesco, Akira, and TJP of United Empire defending their titles against Leo Rush and Yo. And I want to say Yo to the House of Chaiten Gaming and Shorts, who is a Sound Off legend here on our channel. Just renewed his membership for 4 months. So, House of Chaiten, thank you very much. I appreciate that very much. It's very kind of you. So, Leo Rush got his eye split open. It was a pretty gnarly cut early in this match. They were fighting out on the ramp, and he took a double cutter on the ramp. Now, the ramp was made out of LED bulbs, right? This long rampway. By the way, I love the entrance set, the stage, the set, the screens. I thought it was really nice. But they had a very long ramp down to the ring. So when people made their entrance, it was all lit up because it was made of LED bulbs. So Leo took a face plant on the ramp onto one of the bulbs and got a very nasty cut right above his eye. And he was out on the ramp for a while as the match continued in the ring with his partner. So at first, I didn't know that he was injured. I thought he was just selling. When he crawled back to the ring, it was pretty obvious he wasn't just selling, and half his face was just covered in blood. So he got cut pretty badly. But I thought this was a fun sprint. Leo hit his rush hour springboard stunner off the bottom rope. Yo set up for a double arm DDT on TJP, but TJP got an inside cradle and scored the pin out of nowhere. This was really good action. Leo in particular was working his ass off, and the blood. I thought the blood only added to it. Not something I am used to seeing, though, here on a New Japan show, let alone in the opening match, is a gusher here. And this would not be the only time that we would get blood on this show. I can just picture Jon Moxley up in the rafters like Sting, probably just nodding in approval, right? You know he loves it. Hey, Toby Flanagan, thank you for upgrading. Toby just upgraded his membership to Sound of Legend. Thank you, Toby. For the first time ever, we had the IWGP Women's Championship defended here at the Tokyo Dome, with Kairi putting her title on the line against Tam Nakano. The most shocking thing about this match was how short it was. This barely went above 5 minutes. It was shockingly short. So because of how short it was, it felt like it never got out of first gear. The action was good for the time that it lasted, but it just never shifted into that next gear. You know, when I was watching matches, for example, to compile my list of the top 15 for last year, I wanted to make sure that I watched the Kairi match with Mayu Iwatani. And that was an excellent match. Didn't make my list, but I thought that was an excellent match. Hey, Kevin Coleman, thank you for the super chat. I heard that. I had to stop. Hey, Kevin, thank you. I appreciate that. So that's an example of just a great match, one of the great matches that Kairi has had since she returned to stardom. But it's difficult to put a match together like that. And you're on a big stage like this and you get 5 minutes. So Nakano hit a Steiner screwdriver. That got the first pop of the night here in this women's match. She hit a fucking Steiner screwdriver, which she calls the Violet screwdriver. I call it the Violent screwdriver. But in the end, Kairi wins with the insane elbow. And then we had, of course, what everybody is going to be talking about, for better or worse, what everybody is going to be talking about is what came after the match was over. The lights went out, and out walked the former Sasha Banks, going by her new name of Mercedes Moné. She had a giant headdress on that made her look like the Statue of Liberty, and she had all kinds of colors. Yeah, somebody made a comment on Twitter. Yeah, asking what color is Sasha's hair? And all I could think is all of them. Speaking of which, there she is on the screen right now. Hey, Lakers Dynasty 42 just subscribed to the channel. There's Sasha. See, there she only has the one hair color. Here she has all of them. She's got a whole bunch of different colors now in her hair. But she made her way down to the ring. She got in the ring. She took off her robe. She was in her gear, as if she was ready to wrestle. And she shook hands with Kairi, who held up her IWGP women's title. But then, Mercedes attacked her, executed a gory bomb transition into a DDT. But the problem is, Kairi landed on her knees when she was supposed to land on her feet. And so, because of that, it did not look good. Sasha followed through anyway with the DDT. And then there was a delayed sell by Kairi. 2 seconds later, she kind of popped up and sold it. It did not look good. And it sucks that it got screwed up, but I don't put that on Mercedes. I saw a video, and you may have seen it also. It's floating around now on social media. I saw the video of Sasha training in Mexico with Juventud Guerrera. And in the clip that I saw how the move is supposed to be executed. And so, again, I watched it back, and the issue had nothing to do with what Mercedes did here. The issue was simply that Kairi just landed on her knees. And you can't do that move if the person taking the move, when they get flipped over, lands on their knees. They have to land on their feet, and then they take the DDT. So that screwed up the entire thing. And again, it sucks in a big spot like that. You know, she's showing up and making her debut. You want everything to go perfectly. I'm sure she'll watch it back and be like, fuck, you know, but shit happens, right? So she asked for a microphone, and she said that she is the CEO of this women's division. She told Kairi to enjoy the title while she can because she's going to leave her bankrupt bitch or a bankrupt bitch on February 18th. At the Battle in the Valley show that they are doing in San Jose. That's going to be airing on Fight TV, by the way, for anyone who wants to watch it. As I said at the beginning of the review, it was a cool moment for Mercedes because she has talked about wanting to work in Japan for so long. And so in her first appearance, to walk out in front of 26,000 people at the Tokyo Dome, right, it doesn't get any bigger than that. So for her, you know, it was a cool moment. And I think it was a very big moment if you are a fan of Sasha Banks. I have not gone scouring social media to see what all the Sasha stans are saying, if they're saying you're dead to me now because you're no longer in WWE, or if they're happy for her, if they're sticking with her. I don't know what the reaction has been. Frankly, that's a universe I really don't want to delve into. But this did not come off as a big deal at all to the Japanese crowd that was in the building this morning. I did not get the impression that they even really knew who she was. And I was thinking to myself, I'm not even sure that she has ever wrestled in Japan, even for WWE, on any of the tours, like the Japanese tours that they will sometimes do. I'm not aware of her even being on any of those tours. Now, maybe she was, but I don't even know that she was on any of those shows. Like, this legitimately could have been her very first appearance of any kind in a ring in Japan. So that was very apparent. The American fans sure know who she is. And I think that when they go to San Jose for that Battle in the Valley show, the reaction is going to be very different. Now, again, you're also talking about two different cultures here. You're not, no one should have been expecting that Sasha's going to walk out there and get some sort of, like, you know, the Cody Rhodes return reaction to WrestleMania last year, or some kind of Austin pop like the glass was going to shatter. That's not how the Japanese crowds work. But it was noticeable. It was noticeable when she walked out that they really were not very familiar with her at all. But they will be soon. We'll see how many matches she wrestles. We'll see how many appearances in Japan she makes. We know she's doing the one match in San Jose. We have no idea when she'll be wrestling in Japan. You know, Meltzer had mentioned that Stardom is going to be doing a big show at the Yokohama Arena in April. April may be the first time that she actually wrestles a match in Japan. But we'll find out. But I mentioned that she had an interesting comment that she made at the post-show press conference. And she said that this was the first stop on her world tour, and that Japan was lucky to have her first. So that is a woman who is letting us know, in so many words, that she's going to be appearing in a lot of different places. And I said this when I did my predictions, that 2023 was going to be the year of Mercedes, and that she was going to be free of her WWE contract, and she would be allowed to appear anywhere she wants. And it wouldn't just be New Japan and Stardom. I think she'll wrestle at least one match in AEW. It could very well be a week from tonight in LA. We're going to get some more information on Dynamite tonight about Saraya's mystery partner and the whole match next week. It could be next week or it could be a different week. But she's going to be appearing all over the place. Tokyo Dome was just the first stop. WWE, you can't even rule that out either, right? Can't rule out that she'll be back in WWE. I predict in my predictions, I said by the end of the year, she'll be back in WWE. I don't know that, you know, Triple H would have her back in just to be in the Rumble, for example, later this month if she wasn't signed to a contract. I don't see that happening. But that was a very telling remark for her to make in that press conference. We had the IWGP Tag Team Championship up for grabs. FTR defending their titles against Bushimon, Hirooki Goto, and Yoshihashi. I thought this match was excellent. I thought this match was great. FTR, like I said, they've been dropping gold left and right, and this loss here pretty much marked the end of their cross-promotional run that they've been on for, what, the last six to nine months, however long it's been, right? Well, they won the Ring of Honor tag team titles first, and that was in April. Almost a year. And their big inter-promotional run came to an end here on this show. FTR hit the big rig, but the pin got broken up. They also nailed the old Power and Glory Powerplex combo on Goto, who kicked out. Dax hit a stiff pile driver on Yoshihashi. And then FTR hit a spike pile driver. Goto, though, broke up the pin. There were a lot of close near falls here, but Bushimon rallied, and they hit their finish on Dax to score the pin and win the tag team titles. Every year since 2014, New Japan has crowned new IWGP Tag Team Champions at Wrestle Kingdom. So that streak remains alive. This year was no different. Kevin Kelly then went on this weird little rant when the match was over, calling Pro Wrestling Illustrated a fiction magazine, which it is, a fiction magazine. But he took them to task for leaving Yoshihashi and Hirooki Goto off their list this past year of the best tag teams. And he was hopeful that after their match here on the show, that they would have a change of heart. And I just thought to myself, Kevin, if it's a fictitious magazine, then why even bother ranting about this? He was very upset about this. And Yoshihashi and Hirooki Goto were part of this match too. It was an excellent match. So they definitely deserve credit for that. Now, the future of FTR is in question. This feels to me like a team that is just wrapping up their commitment. You know, AEW has the working relationship with New Japan. I don't know if that alone, if let's say FTR were leaving AEW, that they'd have to drop the IWGP belts. But that's kind of what it feels like to me. You know, they've dropped every single set of tag team belts they have. There's been a lot of rumors and speculation about them. And it just looks to me like a team that's getting ready to become free agents and, you know, take their act to the indie scene for a while. Kind of what it feels like to me. We had Zack Sabre Jr. against Ren Narita to crown the first ever New Japan Pro Wrestling Television Champion. 15 minutes on the clock for this one. If there was one thing New Japan did not need more of, it is championships, but here we are. I thought this was very good. A very good mat-based match. You know, if you're not into the more technical mat-based stuff, then you were probably bored to tears by this. But I thought this was very good. I thought the time limit helped a lot because it kept things tight. It gave it a sense of urgency. You knew it wasn't going to go 20 minutes, 25 minutes. We had matches go 30 plus on this show. So I think it helped the match out in that way. Narita got a nice Northern Lights suplex, but then he got caught up in a front chancery. He went for the leg. He got caught in an arm submission of some, I don't even know what he calls it, but he got caught in some kind of arm submission, immediately tapped out. Did not waste any time in tapping out. And so Zack Sabre Jr., who has up to this point never held singles gold for all the years he's been in New Japan. He has been a tag team champion. He's never held singles gold in New Japan until now. And now he has his first taste of singles gold. He is the new television champion. After the match, out comes the Mighty Don't Kneel. Remember them? We had Mikey Nichols and Shane Haste. And all I could think of watching this is, hey, that's Slapjack. We had Slapjack here at Wrestle Kingdom. And they offered Zack Sabre a spot in their faction. They had a, you know, the TDMK shirt. They were presenting him with the shirt. At first, it looked like maybe they were going to challenge him. But then they offered the t-shirt to him. And I guess because Suzuki Goon is no more, Suzuki Goon just disbanded recently, that there was an opening for Zack Sabre to jump on in. So he accepted their offer. He put the shirt on. He hugged them. There's a history there between these guys. So now these guys are all back together. I believe Jonah was part of their group, actually, before he went back to WWE. So I guess a spot opened up and Zack Sabre Jr. decided to take it. So now he's with the Mighty Don't Kneel. We had the NEVER Openweight Championship up next. Machine Gun Carl Anderson defending his title. Monday Night Raw's Carl Anderson defending his title against Tama Tonga. As I said before, the closest thing to WWE against New Japan. This is as good as it's going to get. We had that here in this match. Before the match even started, before the bell rang, Anderson bashed Tama in the head with his NEVER title. Then he gave Tama a suplex onto the guardrail outside. Now, I don't mean that he suplexed him, you know, stomach first and he was hanging over. No, he suplexed him onto the fucking guardrail. And he tumbled and went over. But Anderson kept the fight, you know, right to him. And he took him over by the ramp. And he delivered a burner driver on the LED ramp, dropped him right on his head. Anderson was out here in the opening 60 seconds of this match, wrestling as if somebody right before he walked through the curtain to come out told him, hey, by the way, we don't have your check. Or your check has one less zero than what was promised. This guy was, boy, he was not wasting any time. He was kicking Tama Tonga's ass here at the beginning. But Tama avoided a gun stun attempt on the ramp. After that, he shoved Anderson off. Anderson flew and he landed on his shoulder. So Anderson ended up with control for most of the match. Tama made a babyface comeback, hit the gun stun, which was badly botched. And he pinned Anderson anyway. Instead of calling an audible and doing the spot over again, he just pinned him to win the championship. So the finish looked terrible. The match itself was not bad. I mean, look, you pretty much know what you're getting when it comes to a Carl Anderson match. You can pretty much, you know, visualize it. That's what this was. But there was no way he was walking out of the Tokyo Dome with that championship. This will be the last time we see Anderson in the Tokyo Dome for many, many years. Then we had Keiji Muto's last match in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Place where he made a name for himself. He debuted in October of 1984. And his opponent on that night was Masahiro Chono. And it just so happened that Masahiro Chono was sitting ringside for this match doing with Fujinami, actually, doing commentary. So I thought that was pretty cool, actually. His very first match back in New Japan in 84 was against Chono, and Chono was right there watching the match at ringside. Now, this will not be Muto's final match in the Tokyo Dome. His final, like, final match will be in the Tokyo Dome, but it'll be for Pro Wrestling Noah next month. And I think that's the first time Pro Wrestling Noah is actually doing a show in the Tokyo Dome, first time in like 7 or 8 years. So he'll be back in the Dome in about 6 or 7 weeks, and that'll be his last match for good, if you believe that this is, of course, the last match for him. But here, he was teaming with Hiroshi Tanahashi and Shota Umino, who will be a future headliner for New Japan, against Tetsuya Naito, Bushi, and Sanada. You know, from the outside looking in, as somebody who watches some New Japan, you know, when I can, I don't get to see every show, but Naito has felt just completely cold and insignificant for a long time now. But the thing is, he goes out there, he still gets a reaction. The people still like him. You know, and they were saying on commentary how, oh, Naito was upset that, you know, he didn't have a big match on Wrestle Kingdom, but, you know, his goal is to get to Wrestle Kingdom 18 next year and be back in the main event and, you know, challenging for the championship. I don't see that happening, but he's still very popular. It's just that he hasn't really had much to do now for a few years. It's just kind of like he's been pushed down the card, and it feels like his time is come and gone, but he is still very popular with these New Japan fans. Appropriate that Sanada started this match out here with Muta, considering that he was, you know, his protege. He was Muta's protege. And I predicted, when I did my predictions for this show, I predicted that the finish would be Sanada hitting Muta with the moonsault and pinning him to win the match. That did not happen here. That did not happen. And instead, he hit him with it in the first minute and almost pinned him, but Muta kicked out. Now, Muta actually went up to try for a moonsault a couple of minutes later. And it was funny because Tanahashi came over and was like, no, no. He was begging him not to do it on those fucking knees. He was begging him not to do it. And wisely, he thought better of doing it. So LIJ worked over Tanahashi. Muta nailed the Shining Wizard on Bushi later in the match, which allowed Umino to drill him with the Death Rider and pin him to win the match. So they gave the win here to the youngest member of the team. The youngest member of the team, the youngest member of the match. And I think that that right there tells you how high New Japan is on Umino here. So one final win here in a New Japan ring for Muto. So it was, you know, the match itself was okay. You know, Tanahashi, obviously this was a big step down from some of the big matches we've seen him have over the years, but Tanahashi's getting older. It feels like, you know, Tanahashi and Okada, they had that rivalry together. And you could say the same thing almost about Okada, except Okada's still only, what, 35? 34, 35? You know, Tanahashi is, you know, quite a bit older than he is. But yeah, this was not the biggest Tanahashi match that we have seen here on a New Japan Wrestle Kingdom show. Then we had a four-way for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship with Taiji Ishimori defending against Hiromu Takahashi, El Desperado, and Master Wato, getting the spot that would have gone to Kushida had he not come down with hand, foot, and mouth disease. I know quite a few people who have foot and mouth disease. But this is different. Hand, foot, and mouth disease is very different. Late in the bout, Wato had the match won, but the referee was pulled out of the ring. Ishimori nailed Wato in the back with a chair. Still wasn't enough to put him away. Wato at one point hit Ishimori with a big move. It might have been one of his finishers. And he got a stack pin, and it looked like he had the match won. And then he let go of the pin. Why? Even the announcers had the same reaction. Why? Why would you do that? So he gave up the pin to go up to the top rope to hit another move. Only when he went up to the top rope, he got cut off by Desperado. Idiot. This man is a fool. Later on, Wato hit a huge German suplex. I mean, Hiromu got some good height on that jump. I mean, this huge German suplex. who kicked out, though. Hiromu did. Hiromu nailed his Time Bomb 2 finish, which is like a sit-out side power slam. And he pinned Wato to win the championship. So there was good action here. You know, really, I mean, I've seen Hiromu have a lot of great matches before, usually singles matches. When you have four guys in the ring, it's a whole different dynamic. There's a whole lot of different things going on. Wato is another one, kind of like Umino, where you could see... I remember when Wato came back from excursion, and the first time I saw him, I don't remember what he was wearing, but I remember I reviewed it on the podcast, and I just remember, like, completely mocking whatever it was that he was. He looked ridiculous. But you could see there's something there. He's improving, and obviously they probably look to him as another one who will be a bigger star for them in due time. But I thought the match was good. It was good action here. But then we had part one of our double main event on this show, with Will Ospreay defending his IWGP United States Championship against the returning Kenny Omega. Now, they had a press conference the other day, and Ospreay confronted Omega. Omega never said a word. And Ospreay cut this 2-minute-long promo on him that was so fucking good. I mean, he just verbally wrecked this man. It was such a great promo. I was already looking forward to the match, but that promo got me hyped up for it even more. This right here is the match I was most looking forward to. Omega came out, and he got the Final Fantasy entrance. I love the giant image of the angel with the one wing. I thought that was a very cool visual there, up on the big screens. But this was Kenny Omega's return to New Japan for the first time in 4 years. Was it 4 years? Yeah, 4 years. And what we got here was vicious heel Kenny Omega. This is a Kenny Omega that we have not seen in a very long time. This is the Kenny Omega that I missed. Don Callis was there, not with him. He didn't come down to the ring with him. He wasn't ringside in his corner, but he was ringside doing commentary with Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton and Gino Gambino over there. They had the three of them back together for the first time in a while. So the match started, and Omega was focusing on Ospreay's back. And right away, Ospreay is in sell mode here, right? He is in full sell mode. Omega is just working over the back, slams him backwards into the barrier at ringside. And he was in control for a long time. Ospreay made a comeback. When he went for the Os Cutter outside, Omega, though, held onto the rope. They were on the apron. And Omega held onto the ropes. Ospreay crashed and burned. Omega pulled out a table. And not just any table. It was one of these Japanese tables. These Japanese tables don't fuck around. You think the American tables are something. These Japanese tables. The American tables, if you blow on them, they break. The Japanese tables, you got to work to break these fucking things. Although this might have been the most easily breakable of the Japanese tables that I've ever seen them use on one of these shows. He pulled the table out, and he was slamming it on Ospreay. Laid it across him, came off the apron, double stomped the table with Ospreay underneath. Later on in the match, the big spot, the spot that made me audibly gasp when I saw it. They were up on top, and Omega hit a DDT from the top rope onto the exposed top turnbuckle. So they both fell, and Ospreay head first right onto the turnbuckle, took this nasty fall, ended up rolling down to the floor. His United Empire stablemates were crowding around him to check on him. But really what they were doing was they were shielding him, because obviously that's when the blade job was taking place. Once the camera zoomed back in on Ospreay, he was bleeding. He was laying in a pool of blood. It was a puddle of blood underneath where he was laying. So he came up very bloody from that spot. Omega smashed him in the head with the table a few more times. Actually, the table was propped up against the guardrail outside. And Omega was smashing him into the table several times. The announcers were talking about how this match has to be stopped. Ospreay would hear none of it. Ospreay did not want to quit. Red Shoes was checking on him. He said no. Ospreay battled back. But again, Omega smashed him into the top turnbuckles. By this point, it was very clear if it wasn't already, by this point, it was very clear that Omega was the heel and it was Ospreay that they wanted to get sympathy on. And he was working from underneath, like the babyface working from underneath. That was an interesting dynamic for this match, because I would not have called Ospreay a babyface going into this match, but he definitely was in that position here in this match. Omega hit the V-trigger. He went for the one-winged angel off the top rope. Ospreay, though, was pulled up so he could eat yet another V-trigger. Then another one, and then another one. There were a lot of V-triggers in this match. Ospreay went for a series of Kawada kicks in response. Omega looked like he nailed the lariat, but Ospreay actually flipped over onto his feet and got Kenny up for a sit-out powerbomb for a close near fall. The crowd was very much behind Ospreay. Omega escaped the Stormbreaker, but he got caught with a Styles Clash. There were so many back-and-forth strikes here between these two. If I had one criticism of this match, and again, I love this match, and it was easily the best match on the entire show. But if I had one criticism of this match, it would be that it was one of those Adam Cole matches, is how I would describe it. And I love Adam Cole. But when you watch an Adam Cole match, especially when, like those old takeover matches, or a big pay-per-view match of some kind, the thing that is always kind of a hallmark of those matches, they go too far with the near falls and the kickouts from big moves. You know, I can tolerate, okay, this guy kicked out of a big move and this guy kicks out of a big move, but there were so many V-triggers and so many moves that you're like, okay, that's got to put this guy away. And then we get the shoulder up, we get another kick out, and then another one, and then there's more V-triggers. I just think that they took it too far. I would have cut some of that out. That would really be my only critique, though, of this match. I just thought there were one too many near falls for my liking. But Omega finally connected with the Ibushi Kamigoye and hit the one-winged angel, and he got the pin, which surprised me. I was not expecting Omega to win this match, but he got the pin, and Kenny Omega is the new United States champion, starting his second run with the title. Again, he was the first ever IWGP United States champion, and now this begins reign number two. This was a fucking war between these two men. I love this match. This was the match of Wrestle Kingdom 17. It did not disappoint. Omega did not come out of this match unscathed either. He had a good mouse right by his right eye. I would imagine his eye is probably swollen shut by now. And now he gets to go fly home and work a ladder match on Dynamite next week for the Trios titles. But it also means he's going to be sticking around with New Japan, which I think is great. And again, he could defend the U.S. title on U.S. soil. You know, he can wrestle on shows here in the States without even having to fly over to Japan and defend the U.S. championship. Because I just can't imagine that Tony Khan is going to want him flying back and forth, you know, a whole bunch of times to Japan. Obviously, there's going to be people on Dynamite tonight who were not there because some of them flew over for Wrestle Kingdom, and Tony Khan doesn't have access to those people. And as a one-time thing on a big show, I'm sure that's fine, but I can't imagine that he would want to tolerate that numerous times over the course of the year. A rematch with Ospreay would seem very likely to me. I would have to think there'll be a second match. I hope there's a second match. As great as this fucking match was, do you not want a second match between these two? I do. I think we'll get one. I don't know when, but I think we'll get one. Maybe we'll get it in AEW. Maybe we'll have to wait until Forbidden Door, and we'll get Kenny Omega against Will Ospreay at Forbidden Door 2. Right? New Japan got the first one. AEW gets the second one. I could see that. And then finally, we had the winner of the G1 Climax, Kazuchika Okada, challenging for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship against Jay White. Going on after that banger between Omega and Ospreay was not an enviable position for these two to be in. This did not reach the level of past Okada Tokyo Dome main events for me. I thought it was still very good, but it was nowhere close to the Omega and the Ospreay match. But it also just, it was missing something. And I don't know what, because the work here was very good. It had length. They gave them plenty of time. Maybe it's Okada, and I love Okada, but maybe it's Okada fatigue. I don't know what it is, but this did not have the same kind of big match feel that a lot of the Okada Tokyo Dome main events have had. You know, we came into the show and people were calling it a double main event. I was calling it a double main event. The real main event on this show was Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega. And now that the show is over, having seen it all, that to me felt like the real main event of this show. But I still thought it was very good. We got the long, methodical opening, you know, because you knew they were going to go at least 30 minutes, right? So they're going to start very slow. And we've seen a lot of Okada main events like this before. You start slow and you build. Jay White turned a Rainmaker attempt into a Blade Runner for a close two count. Okada tried to fight his way out of another Blade Runner, but he got smashed with a pair of his own Rainmakers. And Okada ended up coming back. He ducked a Blade Runner attempt, hit a Rainmaker out of nowhere for a close near fall. Okada nailed a Blade Runner of his own, and then one final Rainmaker to win back the championship. Jay White, when the match was over, you know, he was in disbelief. He crawled out of the corner over to Okada, rather, who was posing in the middle of the ring, and he kind of used Okada to pull himself back up, and he was staring him dead in the face, and he paid respect to him. Jay White actually paid respect to Okada before he left. Okada takes the microphone, and he is cutting his customary post-match promo here. And Shingo Takagi comes out. He has a microphone. He gets into the ring. And Shingo said that he lost the title to Okada a year ago, and he challenged him to a match. So we have that to look forward to, Okada and Shingo. Sounds good to me. But in his post-match promo after Shingo left, Okada got emotional. You could see his eyes were getting red. He was getting emotional, talking about the fans being back and the fans able to make noise. And also talking about Antonio Inoki, who passed away a few months ago. Again, I didn't understand what he was saying, but I have to mention one thing, by the way. And maybe somebody in the chat or somebody will watch this and they'll let me know. I watched the pre-show, and I think it was after the pre-show matches were over, but right before the main card started. The same thing last year. They have this woman, this girl, in the ring. I have no idea what she's saying. It's all in Japanese, but she's very bubbly and smiling and laughing, and she's reading off these cards, and she's making some kind of announcements of some kind. They were talking about like voting. You can vote again. I had no idea what they were talking about. She's cute. She's very cute, but I have no idea who she is. Does she work for New Japan? Is she some sort of television star? Like I have no idea who she is. What her name is. This is the second year in a row I've seen this woman, and I have no idea who she is. So if anybody can chime in and let me know. It's driving me nuts. Hey, Scott Woodford, thank you for gifting a channel membership. He just gifted a membership, and the lucky recipient was Seth Iroth. So Seth, welcome to the channel. You can thank Scott for your new membership. They went back to their tried and true. They went back to Okada. I figured that it's exactly what was going to happen. I know that for some people, you know, I mean, LOL Okada, it's like LOL Charlotte, right? Just look what we had on SmackDown last Friday, right? Charlotte Flair comes back. Oh, she's the champion again. Or back when he was Super Cena, right? LOL, Cena wins, right? And some people look at Okada the same way. Okada is still one of the very best in the entire world. And he is still New Japan's most popular star. Okay, Okada is still the guy in New Japan. But I think the Tokyo Dome main event next year is going to be Okada defending his title, whether he holds it for the entire year or he loses it and wins it back before we get to the Wrestle Kingdom show next year. I think it's going to be Okada defending the IWGP World Heavyweight title in the Tokyo Dome next year. Against Will Ospreay and putting over Ospreay. And Ospreay is going to win. Ospreay is going to end the night as the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. Because there's a story that they're telling with Okada and Ospreay where Ospreay cannot beat Okada fair and square. I think he has one win over him. It was not a clean win. Every other time they've been in the ring together, he can't figure this guy out. He can't beat this guy. you look at the matches that Ospreay is going out there and having, and he has committed himself. I think he has said actually his New Japan deal is up this year. But he has not given any indication that he plans on leaving. Obviously, if he leaves, that changes the whole dynamic. But that's kind of, looking forward, that's what I see. You know, the belt is back on Okada. Oh, you know, I know people are tired of him. But I think the ultimate goal here is for him to finally put over Will Ospreay and crown a new champion in Will Ospreay. That's the direction I see them going. But there was a comment that Chris Charlton on commentary made. At the end of the Muta match, he made this comment. He said that he thinks that we're going to see Shota Umino in the Tokyo Dome main event as early as next year. I don't see it happening that quickly. But I do think that you'll probably see him. I mean, look, he's progressing. And I remember, he was the one that was doing the stuff with Jon Moxley, right? Jon Moxley had his little buddy Shooter, took him under his wing when he was doing stuff with New Japan. To see him where he was then and where he is now, and, you know, he's only going to get better, he's only going to progress even more. Yeah, I could see him in a Tokyo Dome main event one day. I don't think that's going to be next year. I think he's being a little optimistic about that. But my point is, they are building some people like him, or like Wato, right? They have certain people that they are building who are younger. Somebody like Umino could be the next Okada. So they're building up people for the future. Okada is not going to be in the main event every single year. But he is still their biggest star, and so I understand why they keep going back to him. But on the whole, I thought this was a very good show. I thought both main events were excellent, but the Omega-Ospreay match just blew everything else away on this show. The FTR match I thought was also excellent. I very much enjoyed that. There were a bunch of matches that were good to very good. Like the junior heavyweight stuff. The women's match was absurdly short, but it was good for the time they gave it. There really was nothing bad. There was nothing terrible on the show match-wise. So a very good Wrestle Kingdom on what is a very busy wrestling day. When is night two? Night two is not a Tokyo Dome show, but night two is on January 24th. I want to say 21st or 22nd. It's one of those two dates. I think it's at Yokohama. But yeah, they did not do a two-night Wrestle Kingdom back-to-back at the Tokyo Dome this year. This was the first time in a few years where they've gone back to basically the one-night format. And again, the reason why this show was so long is because they went back to a one-night format. It's like if WWE decided, we're not going to do two-night WrestleManias anymore. Some people don't like that. Some people don't like two-night WrestleManias. I miss the days of having a one-night WrestleMania that wasn't 6 hours long. But you're never going to get that. So you're either going to get a two-night WrestleMania, and they could spread the matches out, or you're going to get a one-night WrestleMania, and you're going to be sitting there for 6.5 hours. That's what New Japan did. They got rid of the second night, and so this show was longer. I actually have grown to like the two-night WrestleManias because, number one, it's good for the channel. We get two huge nights on the channel instead of one. But it does help. It does help spread things out a little bit more. You know. So that was one change that New Japan made this year. I want to mention one thing here. I'm going to get into your super chats. I do want to mention, though, for those who are not aware, there is a sale going on. It is the Pro Wrestling Tees New Year's sale. And right now you can get 20% off any shirt in the Sound Off store. When you go to prowrestlingtees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff, all of our t-shirt designs are up there. You want 20% off, just punch in the code New Year at checkout. And you will get 20% off. That is today through Monday, January 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So go ahead and buy a shirt. Support the stream. There you go. Super chats are all blacked out. Look at this. There we go. I was like, where'd they go? Where did the super chats go? They vanished on me. All right, let's run through these real quick here. We have Tyler dropping $1.99. Says, Sasha is still on the active WWE roster page. As I mentioned before, I wouldn't read too much into that. Hyru with the $5 super chat. New Japan next month, AEW in March, WrestleMania in April. I cannot wait to attend these shows. Wrestling is alive and well. Hey, Issa, thank you. Happy New Year to Issa. We've got NYC Demon Diva with us here in the chat. Always good to see her. Hey, Hyru, have fun, man. That's awesome. That's a lot of wrestling that you're going to be going to. I'm jealous. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury, thanks for working a double shift for us today. I keep checking the time to make sure that we don't bleed over into Dynamite here. I have to get the page up for Dynamite when I'm done here. Uncanny EXP. Woke up just in time for the Omega Osprey match, and it did not disappoint. A great start to 2023. Yeah, I was not staying up until 3 or waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch the show. So that's why this review was later than I wanted it to be. Justin Jack, great Wrestle Kingdom show. Also, would you be willing to take a bump in Hog? And have you ever been asked to do anything beyond just commentary? It's an interesting super chat. And I'm going to give you a no comment. I mean, as far as the first part of your super chat, yeah, I'm willing to do whatever is going to make the product better. So if there was a reason for it, sure, why not? As far as the rest of your super chat, all I can say is stay tuned. Suplex with the $5 super chat. Happy New Year, Salamaster. While New Japan can take too long at times for stories to culminate, cannot wait to see Osprey win the G1 and win at Wrestle Kingdom 18. I had Osprey as my G1 winner in my predictions for 2023. You and I are on the same wavelength, my friend. Am I ever going to go to a Wrestle Kingdom? I'd love to. But I mentioned this on the stream the other day. I was told that this time of year, like around New Year's, is a terrible time to visit Japan because everything is closed. So I would rather go, you know, in the summertime so I can hit up some of the G1 shows. See, I think that would be better. But I would love to make it over there at some point. I'm not looking forward to a 15-hour flight. That I'm not looking forward to that at all. But one of these days. Justin Smith with the $5 super chat. FTR dropping the belts to Goto and Yoshi felt lame. Also, enough with Okada being champion every 6 months. Feels a bit like Charlotte now works in New Japan. Oh, give it time. She may be there too. No women's division is safe from Charlotte Flair. The House of Chaiten Gaming and Shorts, which is a very interesting name. It says, Omega Osprey 2 at Forbidden Door. It's exactly what I said before. I think you're onto something. The only question about that is if they do Forbidden Door 2 in June. June is still, you know, a ways off. I don't know that they would want to wait, you know, 5 months to do a rematch. But that would seem like a good place to do it to me. Especially if they want the rematch in an AEW ring instead of a New Japan ring. Kevin Coleman with the $21 super chat. Look at Kevin. God bless early Salamonster, just before I hit the hay here in Ireland. Osprey and Omega stole the show. A fantastic match. Spanish Goddess, I'll be at the San Jose show. Well, you gotta send in a live report or check into the live chat when the show is out. Well, actually, I don't know if I'll be live then. Well, send me an email. Or when you pop onto the Monday Night Raw stream that Monday, if we don't do a stream that weekend, you'll pop in and let us know how the show. Spaghetti, which was better for you, Omega versus Jericho 1 or Osprey and Omega? I enjoyed them both, but I gotta go Osprey and Omega. Juice in the chat wants to know, do I think New Japan will ever run that MSG show they never had because of COVID in 2020? Yeah, that they were supposed to do that Wrestle Dynasty show. You know, New Japan is weaker now than it was back then. And so I don't think they could do it now. I think running Madison Square Garden now, just if it's solely a New Japan show, would be I think it would be suicide for them. But I do think a joint AEW show with New Japan, they could sell out Madison Square Garden. And I had thought about, like, what if they did Forbidden Door 2 instead of Chicago? What if they did Forbidden Door 2 at Madison Square Garden? Right? Because if you want to have a shot at selling out MSG, that's the only way New Japan, I think, right now would be able to do it. They'd have to partner up together. But I just don't know that it's so close to September. And New Japan, or AEW, they've got the relationship with Arthur Ashe. And they're going to be in New York for Grand Slam 3 months later. I don't know that they would want to run a big show in the New York City market, you know, and not do it with the building they have the relationship with. I just don't know if that's going to work out time-wise. But that would be the only way, I think, that New Japan would be able to sell out the Garden. They'd have to partner up with AEW. It's like Ring of Honor, right? Ring of Honor sold out Madison Square Garden. No, they didn't. Ring of Honor partnering with New Japan Pro Wrestling when New Japan was as hot as they were. That sold out Madison Square Garden, not Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor did not sell out Madison Square Garden. You know, they could take credit for it, but let's be honest. Without New Japan, they would not have sold out the Garden. Spaghetti also says, which AEW wrestler would you send on excursion? Which AEW wrestler would I send on excursion? Let's send Jade Cargill on excursion. Let's send her over to Japan. I think they would be able to teach her a few things, right? How about Jade Cargill in Stardom? What do you think about that? Unregistered Hypercam 2, which sounds like a default name that somebody forgot to change. Not sure her name, but she was announcing TV Asahi's poll for most popular wrestler. Yeah, again, it's just I don't know her name. That's why I asked the question. I saw her last year, too, on the pre-show. But I have no idea who she is. Unbelievable. Mr. Ruby Dog, thank you for the $5. We've got JB's Productions with the $24 Super Chat. Do you think the Bianca-Alexa feud is turning into a bit of a shoot? They roughed each other up good in that match. Belair has 3 stitches in her lower jaw, a swollen cheek, and posted her cousins want to beat Alexa up. I think you're being worked, dude. That's what pro wrestling is. Now, I think everything is just fine between Bianca and Alexa. And Dr. Dakota Scorpio stayed up until 7:30 in the morning, but I enjoyed the show. Well, you were braver than I. I thought about it, but I said that's not happening. Okay, her name is Sumugi Mitani. Is this Sumugi Mitani? I'll have to look her up. Just, you know, for research purposes. But thank you. Thank you for that. And Sam Dankman Weed just dropped $5. Solomonster wanting to know her name reminds me of the Office episode where Michael wanted to know the chair model's name. Rojo Bear 24 with the $5. I want to see MJF against Kenny Omega for the AEW Championship at Forbidden Door 2. What are your thoughts? Why waste a big match at Forbidden Door if it's not an interpromotional match? Like, the top matches on that show should be interpromotional. Even though Omega now holds a New Japan title, you could do MJF and Kenny Omega at any time. Why waste it on Forbidden Door? I don't want to see that. I would much rather see the rematch with Omega and Ospreay, or I would rather see Omega and Okada, because it's been years since we've seen. I would much rather see that than Kenny Omega against MJF on that show. Triple threat? No. No triple threats. No triple threats. No fatal four ways. One on one. Solomonster says her name rhymes with a body part. Vulva? Dolores. If it rhymes with a body part, maybe it's Dolores. How about that? Who would I personally want to see take that U.S. belt off of Kenny Omega? He says, I don't think it is Ospreay. Well, I mean, if it was a member of the New Japan roster, I don't know, Shingo, it looks like Shingo's going to challenge Okada, right, for the IWGP heavyweight, so it wouldn't be him. Oh, you know, well, you know who I would love to see challenge Kenny Omega for the U.S. title? Kota Ibushi. How's that for a match? Kota Ibushi, whether he is a part of the New Japan roster or not, and it will probably not be. Omega and Ibushi for the U.S. title. I don't think New Japan would approve of that, though, if Ibushi was no longer on their roster. Shota, yeah, you know what? Shota is a possibility. I was just talking about how high they are on him, and they've got, clearly they see big things in his future. Would Omega put over Umino and have him win the U.S. title? Yeah, you know what? I could see that. Absolutely, I could see that. I still think we're going to get a rematch with him and Ospreay, though. I mean, how do you not do a rematch after that? All right, this has been fun. I thank you for the impromptu stream. Again, I was hoping to get this done a little bit earlier, but the day got away from me. So I wanted to make sure I got this in before Dynamite, which is now about 20 minutes away. And I still have stuff to do before Dynamite starts. So we're going to save Be the Booker for later, assuming that we hit our likes goal. Which is why when the page goes up, you need to go like. Because we're going to be doing the likes goal for Be the Booker. We'll do that later. Big Dynamite tonight. Big card. New set. I know pictures have already leaked on social media. I have avoided them. I will see it when it pops up on my TV. But I'm looking forward to Dynamite tonight. It's going to be a big show. And I will be back with you in just a few hours, less than 3 hours from now. I hope you will join me for the Dynamite review a little bit later on tonight. Juan Ocampo says that Will Ostrich guy is pretty good. Yeah, he is pretty good. He's all right. He's okay. And Derek Fleming Jr., stuck in 2 feet of snow since Monday in South Dakota. Well, that sucks. I hope you can dig out very soon. Stay safe. Darby Allin going to win the TNT Championship tonight from Samoa Joe in his hometown. We'll see if I'm right. I'll see you for the Dynamite review later.